Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices addresses how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we want to look at the long-term ramifications of changes in our society. In collaboration with KCBX, Central Coast Voices is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, an arm of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. I want to remind you that this is a program you're welcome to call into, and I'll remind you of the phone number a number of times, but the phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We're going to talk today about a project that I have not been able to use a word other than absolutely fascinating and enlightening when we talk about it. It's called the Poetic Justice Project. In the past 30 years in California, we have added 21 new state prisons. And with this, we've added a prison population that's expanded from 23,000 to 170,000 people. And while it's reported that taxpayers pay about $11 billion a year to operate this system, and it is Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, cooperatively little amount of that money is actually used in the prison budget for rehabilitation. And out of that came a project that started in about 2009, and it is called the Poetic Justice Project. It really is a new and different way to look at basically trying to cut down on the amount of recidivism or returning to prison that we find with a lot of prisoners. And from that standpoint, where there's a lot of effort to try and cut that down and work with prisoners to better integrate them into society. The Poetic Justice Project is basically a program dealing with both arts and mentoring and theater production to work with prisoners leaving prison and giving them an opportunity to look at ways to get involved in the process and work a little more thoroughly in that. My guests today are Rich Shepherd and Leonard Flippin. And because we've got a few folks that are maybe caught in traffic, we're not sure who all is going to be with us today, but we're working with that. And I believe Leonard just walked in the room, so thank you. Anyway, but we're just getting started. Rich, why don't you give me an idea of, for you personally, what this project has been? And that'll maybe give our listeners a sense of what it is that's really the goal and focus here.
Well, this project, Poetic Justice Project, has really opened my eyes to some issues that I used to kind of just turn my head the other way about. And it's kind of been freeing for me in a way. I stepped out of my comfort zone and fell into a part in one of the plays and found out that I really enjoy working with the other actors and doing whatever I can to help this along. And its mission is what it's all about, you know, and I'm really thrilled to be part of it.
Okay. Leonard Flippin is the outreach coordinator, and Leonard just walked in. Thanks for getting here. I know it's been a crazy day for you. Give us an idea of the origin of the program, if you could.
So Poetic Justice Project was born inside prison, actually. Deborah Tobola was artistic director there, and And so she spent quite a few years working with inmates, individuals, men in prison. And what happened is towards the end of her career, she decided that she was going to try to continue to offer that service on the outside. And it just so happened that there was three, maybe four individuals that were paroling from CMC at that time. So they came out, and we actually performed a play that they had actually – it was written by inmates and performed inside of CMC. And it was called Blue Train, and we performed that at the Little Theater, I think in 2008, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it was a great success from my standpoint of view. And then so we just kind of went forward from there.
So. Yeah. It It's not. Are there people involved in the program as actors who are not formerly incarcerated individuals, or is it pretty much? So are you trying to blend together actors who have not been in that environment with actors who have been in that environment as they work through things in their life?
That would be a no. Okay. We're exclusively formerly incarcerated individuals, whether it's one day in jail or 38 years in prison. And the reason for that is that we part of our mission and process is twofold. It's to, of course, to inform the public about what it's like to be in prison, but it's also about helping those individuals who have been incarcerated to reintegrate back into society. And so we have found that it's almost like two different, very separate cultures. We like to keep that as part of it. So we're almost like a reentry process. And we are in a reentry process for the formerly incarcerated.
We'll get into more detail of that in a minute. We do have a caller on the line, and I'll get to Paul. I'll get to you in just a second. I want to remind folks, this is an open discussion. KCBX Public Radio is community radio, and you and I are the community together. So, and as are my guests. We want you to have a chance to be part of the discussion. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. And actually, it appears that our guest is not on the line, so maybe if he calls back, we'll get him back in the discussion. I guess that was a nice, polite way to ask both of you if you indeed are paroled or released formerly incarcerated individuals, and I'm assuming that is the case. Where did this get introduced to you in your involvement with the prison process? And I mean, my thought is that talking to the average prisoner in CMC or county jail or anywhere about, hey, let's do a theater project that's going to be a constructive part of your release program and your ability to stay out of prison. I'm thinking a lot of folks, maybe both of you, were looking at like, guys, give me a break. This is not where I'm thinking of being. So how has that process evolved?
Well, for me, I've never been to prison, but about 6 years ago, I spent almost the entire year in the county jail. And this has been a bridge, you know. It's another. I attend other fellowships as well, but it's helping me to get back into society, to give back to be part of.
How about you, Leonard?
Well, I spent the majority, probably 95% of my 20s in and out of prisons and jails, and a good percentage of my 30s. So. You're right. The idea of coming out here and putting on plays just was not something that was at the top of my bucket list. But what did happen for me was, you know, when I finally decided to turn my life around, upon my last parole, I was well aware of how difficult that process was. And so I became kind of an advocate for prison reform. I was a keynote speaker, and I would, put on presentations. And inevitably, I never received a response from the public that I was looking for or hoping for. You know, I like to always say that, prison experiences are not dinner time table conversations. People don't really want to hear about it. And it's not anything that I think that they're conscious of. It's just one of those things like, dirty laundry or old garbage. You just kind of put it outside back and you leave it out there and leave it alone, because it smells. But what happened with Poetic Justice Project was I was a keynote speaker at something called PAC meetings. And Deborah, when she started decided to do this, she, of course, showed up at the PAC meeting because some of the individuals that she was – that had just paroled from CMC were at the PAC meeting. And I was the keynote speaker. So, of course, she approached me and, hey, Leonard, why don't you be an actor? And I go, no, I'm an activist. I'm a keynote speaker. I'm out getting people to sign petitions. And so I was pretty much just very adverse to it. And it seemed kind of feminine as well. I was like, because she's a, artistic director. That just did not fit with my tough prison exterior at that time.
So the word artistic and prison inmate didn't
did
fit
not
together
at okay. all. Really right. didn't.
so I can understand. I have not been to prison, but I can understand that would be a mix that would maybe bewilder anybody.
Yeah. So as Providence would have it, me and my girlfriend were happened. She took me shopping in San Luis Obispo the day that they were having auditions, and we thought, well, let's go by and check these people out. And I was the first thing is that I was impressed by the commitment of the individuals that were there. That really helped me to see that these guys were prisoners, but they were committed to this acting, and that was because they had done it on the inside already. So there was that. That was the bridge for me. And then the other thing that happened is she said, you only have to do a very small part. And your part is to be nothing but this angry shot caller gangster, guy. And so I said, I can do that. So that was my part. So my part, I think I had maybe just a few lines, but I was a standard with a cane in my hand and looked really mean. And so I thought I could do that. But what happened is the play went really well, but what really, and it literally brought me to tears, was the response that the audience had to the play. And then I thought, okay, this is what I've been looking for. This is – it literally just opened their hearts and their minds, and they heard our stories. So and the rest has kind of been history.
Wait, you hit on a key phrase there. You said they heard our stories. So what type of – I guess you were not doing a stage version of Blazing Saddles or a new version of with former inmates doing Our Town.
Right.
What was the theater experience that connected it for you that way?
Our prison's issues is tragic in so very many ways. But, of course, in every bit of tragedy, there's human beings, there's people. And I think as the public, we'll use the public, we only see the tragic part of it and we just assume that people deserve it and we forget about the humanity. And so what happens in the prison experience is that we're able to touch that humanity because it's art. You can't help but fall in love in the stories. And that leads to opening hearts and minds where they can actually hear the fact that, wow, this really is tragic. A Blue Train was about a father who had a son who ended up being in prison with him at the same time. And the father ends up giving his life away for his son. Now, that's a very tragic story. Oh, but it's a real story, and it's a story that has happened before. I would say institutional individual. One of my greatest fears, and it only happened once in my life, was to be locked up with my son. And literally, I was on my way out of county jail as my son was coming in. I think maybe we spent maybe 3 hours in the same institution. Thank God.
Leonard, I'm sorry, Rich. For you. I mean, I'm thinking, if I just got out of prison and I've just lived the reality of prison life is the reality I had in your case for a year in county jail.
Right.
And I apologize for a layman on this. County jail and CMC are not a whole lot of different. I mean, it's incarcerated is incarcerated. So I'm apologize if I've mixed them together in a way that's uncomfortable. But my thought is, gee, the last thing I want to do is theater that specifically ties into something that's gone on that's been very painful in my life.
Yeah. For me, I actually just kind of fell into this whole thing. I think my higher power kind of laid some footwork for me and I was attending a fellowship that I attended, and a girl that was in a play, they were having a hard time filling one of the parts. A couple people had backed out, and it was 2 weeks before the play was supposed to go on, and they asked me if I would, consider, doing it. And so I kind of just told her, yeah, sure, here, I'll take the script, I'll read it, and I'll get back to you, thinking I was just going to turn my back and walk away. Well, she kind of got on me, and when I opened up the script, it was a script called Blythe, and my mom grew up in Blythe. I used to visit my grandparents in Blythe, and my grandfather, the part that I was reading for, talked about all the things my grandfather did, building the dams along the Colorado River and all that kind of stuff. And so I went down to read for the part, and they asked me, well, hey, that was pretty good. Can you do this other part? And so I ended up being Bob, the tow truck driver, in Blythe last year. And, yeah, I didn't think I'd be in theater. It was something I thought about when I was a kid but never did. And but the experience is just been, you know, awesome. I'm out of my comfort zone, but it's a wonderful thing. And like he said, you know, when the response that we get from the community, the people in the audience on the talkbacks, it has opened my eyes to a lot of the things that we take for granted.
Well, you use talkback, so the audience gets to converse with you about the play experience, and obviously you probably get questions like, I thought everybody that was a suggested question, not mine, but it's kind of thing you might guess. Gee, I thought everybody who comes out of prison is just a low life scumbag that I never want to be around. But you guys have real emotions, and why is it work that way? And I guess is that kind of thing that you hear from people? Obviously, at the end of the play, I would hope they have got some understanding of who you are as people, not just as the play. But it's got to be a crazy answer to sort out.
I think it's on varying levels. If you've never been to prison, you've never been to prison, so you have a lot of ideas about what prison is. And so I think we all kind of walk around with that, you know, and then the other side of it is that there are those who have been affected by the prison industry, and that also is a very touchy subject where, oh, my God, I've got a son, a sister, a brother. You know, what is it like for them? Mm-hmm. You know, it's very much a matter of just relating, I think. And I think one of the biggest things of what we do with Poetic Justice Projects is we're in the same space with non-formerly incarcerated people, and that's where the magic happens. You know, I think I kid all the time, and I hope no one takes this the wrong way. A lot of times our shows is like going to the zoo. You know, it's like, oh, that's what they're like, you know, and it sounds funny, but, you know, we walk around with each other all day long, but you're not identified as that. And when we can identify with that, it's very healing for us because it helps to take away the stigma, and it's very healing for the public because they're like, wow, I worked with this guy. I was in, you know, I was in Walmart with this dude yesterday, you know, so that I think that helps a lot.
Yeah, let me go. We've got Carolyn in Shell Beach, so let me grab here. Carolyn, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, jump on in.
Oh, hi, I'm Caroline. I'm a part of the Poetic Justice Project.
Hi, Caroline.
I got involved at 19 years old, and I'm 26 now. And I'm very grateful for the organization. It's changed my life.
What did you think about it when you first got connected to this? I mean, as some of the other guests have said, you know, this is not something I thought was going to fit in my life. I think Leonard's implied that it was either happenstance or serendipity that he ever got involved in this. Were you skeptical of the process when you first started doing it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I had a split reaction where I was really I was afraid at first because for the first time, I was being asked to touch on some deep topics and some deep parts of myself. And then at the same time, I was relieved because I found other people like me who could help me.
The concept of, I mean, both Rich and Leonard have talked about the fact that they're dealing oftentimes with theater subject matter that's not very far from a reenactment or a connection to what it was like to be in prison.
Right.
I'm thinking for some of us that might be something like, I don't want to revisit that. What was it like for you?
Definitely, especially, you know, the most recent show that we've done and the one that we're still doing, we are playing ourselves and we are actually reenacting some of the more heavy and pivotal moments in our lives. And, you know, that's very private. Very private, and so I definitely agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, can you stay with us for a while? I'm going to try and keep you on the line with us, if that's okay.
Sure, yeah, as long as you want.
Okay, if you get disconnected, call right back, but I think I've got you there. Let me go ahead, and we've also got Tracy from San Luis Obispo. I want to give them a chance. Hold on a second.
Great.
Tracy, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay, jump on in.
Well, hello, my name is Tracy, and Poetic Justice Project is definitely my favorite and most heartfelt nonprofit organization. I am an instructor with Poetic Justice Project. I am a director with Poetic Justice Project, and I'm a volunteer. And that's why I'm just very, very supportive of Poetic Justice Project, not only changing the members, the cast members and the talent, but the instructors such as myself.
Mm-hmm. This is for, at this point, I've got four of you. I've got two of you on the call and two of you in the studio. So anybody can jump in where they like. My thought was, if I am a released, formerly incarcerated individual, and I'm otherwise doing well with my life, and I'm getting on with things, and I haven't ended up back in the can for a while or at all, maybe the last thing I want to do is wear a sign that says, "Hey, I'm a former inmate, and I'm going to do a play for you." That seems like that's rather public and out there, when in reality, what you may want to do is be pretty far under the radar, if possible. So, somebody jump in.
Well, I mean, I think that that's what's the beauty of Poetic Justice Project. It's kind of like somebody who's a bully, and they're secretly sad, so they act out. So if you are honest and raw and true, and you can expose your truth and your passion and your changes in front of a group of people, then you will change, and you will, it just, Leonard, help me out here, Caroline. Once you put yourself in a vulnerable position, change is even stronger. Does that make sense, you guys?
Yeah. Well, for me, I mentioned that it's been really freeing. You know, it's like, for me, I had this dirty little secret that I spent a year in jail, and, you know, and I didn't want people to, but, you know, when I'm out there and I get to talk about it, it just takes the power away from it, and
It's kind of like worshiping or praying, you know, with a group of people. For me, I began the journey. I've always been a professional actress, dancer, teacher. Gosh, since I was 11, I had my own studio. Single mother of three, and my third one had a journey. And I was really shocked by it. And then the more I became vulnerable and I reached out, that it's made me a better person. It's made me a better mom, a better friend. We don't keep it secret that she's been to juvenile hall or that she's a self-harmer. We don't, and she's growing, and she's blossoming, you know?
Yeah, Carolyn, I heard you started to have something to add there. Why don't you jump on in?
Oh, well, I was just thinking that, you know, it's so easy to keep these things in the dark, and that's why it's become such a shame, an issue that brings so much shame to so many people. It's because it has been kept in the dark, and so bringing it out into the light seems to really, really diminish that shame.
Uh-huh. And results happen.
Yeah.
Right. Leonard,
Leonard, you had something to jump in there with.
Yeah, I like to call it the three re's. There's reentry, there's reintegration, and there's reassimilation. And reentry is just walking out the gate. Reintegration is taking off the prison blues and putting a suit on and a tie. The assimilation comes from dealing with that stigma that we carry around that says, yes, I'm different, and I know I'm different. When you ostracize a person, you have to have a way of giving them a chance to reintegrate themselves, and it's something that they have to do on the inside. And what Poetic Justice Project does is it helps us to reassimilate back into society, because when an audience stands up and claps for you and says, I love you, that is the public, and that's when the magic happens.
Yeah. I've got four actors on the line here, and it sounds like you get to basically work with theater material that that's not just doing theater. The material you're presenting is tied to the life you have formerly had. Do you get to – how are the plays picked? Who gets to talk about, you know, gee, this is a part that's too close to home, I can't play, or this is a part that's so close to home, I need to play it?
Well, Deborah Tabola, our artistic director and founder, she picks the plays, and she works very closely, especially with Leonard and Jorge. But we've done all kinds of plays by different playwrights, being not-so-well-known playwrights and very well-known playwrights. Right, Leonard?
Yes, we've done quite a few different plays over the years. And again, it's serendipitous or it's just providence, I'm not sure.
It's like the play I did last year, it was entitled Blythe. It was written by a prisoner that was housed in the prison down there 25 years ago, and it had won some awards, and the warden put the kibosh on them performing it on the outside until last year when we were finally able to perform this guy's play. So...
When you're doing this, and everybody knows that the Poetic Justice Project is theater done by former inmates, I do know, and I have some friends who have formerly been in prison, and they have said that as more of the people they know that are outside their real support network. Know about that. It's affected job security. It's affected employment generally. It's affected the attitude that neighbors have had about where they live. You're obviously open to talking about the fact that hey guys, we are former incarcerated individuals in this society, and we can't keep it a secret. And obviously, you don't need to keep it a secret, or you probably wouldn't be doing this. But how do you balance that out?
I believe that the day will come where formerly incarcerated individuals will be preferred neighbors, preferred employees, preferred bosses. And here's why. If a person spends his amount of time incarcerated, when he comes out, he has to work twice as hard as anyone else to integrate back into society. He has to work twice as hard in order to regain his character, and he has to become basically a moral exemplar. And I think society doesn't really see that, probably mostly because they're not looking at it correctly. If you look at some of the greatest human beings that ever walked this earth, there's one little small thread that goes through all of them. They were incarcerated at some point or another, often that being the turning point in their life. So I think a lot of it is just we're not getting told the true story. We're getting a different story than what the reality of it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, jump in.
I'm so sorry, you guys. I'm at work, and I'm on the work phone.
Okay.
I work two full-time jobs. I would like to get off the phone and just say thank you for letting me speak, but I just really want Leonard and everyone to push this Monday's big fundraiser in the village of Arroyo Grande. We've got
Perfect.
Amazing prizes, and it's for a good cause.
Okay. We'll talk about it some more. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Thanks so
okay.
much.
All
Dr.
right.
Later.
Love you, Tracy.
Bye.
Okay. Okay. Carolyn, are you still there? Carolyn.
Yes, I am.
Okay. You're still there. Okay. All right. I have messed up the phone buttons before, so I'm just trying to make sure I don't push the wrong button for the wrong time. Is your what percentage or what level of significance of your audience is your fellow travelers who have been through this experience? Is that something that you see a lot of people who may not feel comfortable getting involved in the theater experience, but feel very empowered by listening to the message that you have from stage about what you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. A lot of the recovery homes in the area come and see us, and you know, I hope they get a lot of hope from us, too. And, yeah, we have a pretty good following.
The project's been going on now for about 8 or 9 years, I guess. Are there people who are involved who've been involved from the start or for a long period of time, or do you see a lot of your actors and participants who – come for a year or two and say, okay, I need to move on in another direction in my life now, but this was valuable while I was here?
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of both of that.
Mm-hmm. We have two. There are quite a few individuals who have been with Poetic Justice Project from the very beginning. supporters. And a lot of them are basically middle-aged women who have either been through the system or been affected by the system. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they really are taking the time to sit down and look at this issue, you know, and have a real good look at it. I think the reason why we don't – and then, of course, with a lot of the other formerly incarcerated men and women who – if you've ever done a Play with Poetic Justice Project, you're always a part of Poetic Justice Project. But you have to remember the reentry and reintegration process is a very difficult process, and it takes a lot of time and energy. So a lot of them will come and do a couple of plays and then kind of move on with their life. But they're still part of this theater group. And then I think the reason why a lot of people don't really – again, it's like the garbage is out back. Why would I want to go look at the garbage? I got other stuff to do. I need to make money. I need to do, you know. So there's that idea of, you know, I don't have time to deal with this. But all in all, I really believe that anyone who's ever been to a Poetic Justice Project has been moved at a level emotionally where they will always carry it with them. So,
is the opportunity available to you, and how does county jail, how does CMC respond to any effort to put on a presentation inside? Or is that not something that's been explored yet?
I just recently went to Corcoran and performed with the inmates there at SATIF. You know, that was something else to be able to do that, to go into the prison as a guest actor and performing a play that they had written, and it was their stories again, you know, and to see these guys become vulnerable, especially in there, you know, put themselves out there, and then after the play, the inmates that got to see it and the response they had to what these guys did, you know, they're getting and working on more opportunities like that, and I think every year we've been performing at Alcatraz, which isn't, you know, technically it's more of a landmark now, but it's a big venue for us there.
Yeah, I would think that for a lot of people, and like you're talking about like in doing this in Corcoran, that in order to feel protected in an somewhat adversarial environment, and coming out and. And I think to be realistic, there are very few people who have been to prison who don't feel like part of what got them there was living in a society that's adversarial to them for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. So that's a population that is not that willing to be emotionally vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So I guess is this – I want to be careful with the word. Is this kind of a sneaky way to get people – A positive sneaky way, but a sneaky way to get people who may be afraid of showing their vulnerability, doing it through theater. So I can act, and my name is Fred, but I'm going to do this part, and the name of the character in the part is named George. So if I'm going to act as George, I can share some vulnerability with the character that I need to share that I can't share otherwise in the society I live in.
I couldn't have said it any better. That's absolutely,
well,
yeah. I mean, absolutely. That is one of the tricks. And the reason why I say it's a trick is because if I tell that to a man coming out of prison who's joining the Poetic Justice Project, he'll walk right back out the door, you know, because he's not coming from a place I'm willing to be vulnerable and that this process is going to happen. But it's something that happens as a result of it. He just doesn't even – he doesn't know that it's happening. And it's very – go ahead, Richard.
Well, for instance, in Corcoran, these guys were telling their stories, a piece from their past, what they expect in the future. And for one of them, it was a very painful. The experience that he had to share was very painful. During rehearsals, we had to stop a few times and let him compose himself. But each time that he put it out there, it got a little easier for him to do, and then he knocked it out of the park during the performance, you know. And it was just I get goosebumps just even thinking about it.
That's got to be a scary experience too, because I'm thinking about that. You've got people sitting in that audience watching that performance that may not like that guy, or may not feel comfortable, or may have a grudge with him. And his vulnerability makes it very risky.
I have a funny story. We were at one point, I don't remember, Caroline, if you remember this, we were sitting around, we were having a conversation about what should be like our motto, our that we should say. And one of them that I came up with was, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And what I meant by that is that is true for the actors as well. But it's also true for the audience, because an audience member walks into that play and he sits down in that chair and he has a preconceived idea of who he is and how the rest of the world is. And as you go through this process, that begins to become stripped away. And we visibly see them transform and say, oh, my God, I had no idea. Or, you know, you really changed my mind in that. So it's.
Yeah, I want to remind folks that this is a call-in program, that you're welcome to be part of this discussion. Obviously, the people we have who have joined the discussion at this point are also people involved in the project, and I thank them very much. Thank you to Carolyn, who's still on the line with us, and Tracy, who shared some time with us. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. Guys, I'm not shocked, but I am very moved by the amount of vulnerability that's got to come about for doing this. It's what we talked about just a moment ago, and that is Rich is talking about doing this at Corcoran with people who are still in prison, and their audience in that environment is people in a lot of cases they do not want to share their vulnerability with.
We performed in front of the assistant warden, some guards, and other inmates, you know, and it was just powerful. It was amazing. I wished more people could have been there.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. We've got Cindy on the line. Hold on a second. Cindy, are you there?
I am.
Thanks for joining the conversation. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, first of all, I'd like to say hello to Leonard and Caroline. And, you know, I've been to their plays. I've seen two different ones. Time Will Tell, I've seen twice. But they're both fantastic plays, and they're great actors as well. But what I'd really like to say is everybody should, you know, go see these plays. I think that it's very therapeutic for the actors, as well as gives us an inside look as the general public as to what prison life was like, but more importantly, how these folks have come out of that lifestyle and are, you know, making a better place and way for themselves.
Yeah. Cindy, what brought this project to your attention and gave you a desire to go see it?
Well, I know Caroline personally. Okay. Hi, Caroline. And,
hey, Cindy.
You know, I just going as a spectator at first, but the first time I went, but loving it so much that, you know, it gave me food for thought. I was listening a little bit ago, I believe it was Leonard saying, you know, the importance of, you know, giving these people, actors, the opportunity to express themselves in a way that is therapeutic, but they get their story out in a intimidating way, even though I guess acting is intimidating for some of them, but, you know, an outlet, a way to share their story without being, demoralized or criminalized. I think that, you know, they've done their time and they have a story to tell. And I believe it's very therapeutic. And it was for me, actually, to watch it. And,
Okay. Thanks, Cindy. Thanks for your call. I do appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
And thanks for your support of the project. I'm sure these fellows are really, and Carolyn, are very happy with that too.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
Carolyn, as you've reached out to the community, how do you go say to people, I mean, Cindy is someone you know, she's come to the play. It's like, by the way, I want you to come to this wonderful theater project I'm involved in, and all the actors are former inmates, and we'll have a great time. Why don't you just come? I mean, I don't know how you start that conversation.
Well, I try to tell them the truth, and just that all the actors are have had trouble with the law in some way or another, from jail to prison. Some of the stories, like mine, are a little bit more mild. Some are, some guys have spent a lot of time in there.
And we basically have put these plays and these shows together to try to reintegrate into the community and try to let the community know who we are and the struggles that we've gone through. So so at the end, we can have harmony.
Mm. Yeah. So how big is your troupe now? I mean, how many people locally do you have that are participating on a reasonably regular basis, Leonard?
I would have to say the number is around six, seven,
eight.
I would say eight. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but yeah, about eight. And it varies. The thing about Poetic Justice Project is we exist from play to play. So one production and then to the next production. And sometimes we add people, we lose people, we combine people. But one of the things I would like to make a plug for is that we're looking at putting on a play of Time Will Tell in September at Cal Poly. And, you know, I know one of the things for Caroline, I'm very reluctant to promote myself. I don't know if it's low self-esteem or just, you know, the stigma of it being a play. So we're hoping that by having a venue where we can be consistent, that it's a lot easier for us to promote it. You know, and I apologize for all the probably hundreds of people that know me that I've never told them that I've got a play coming up. So
hopefully some of them are listening. Yeah. And your cell phone will go off in about 20 minutes and say, dude, you did not tell me about this.
I get it all.
You've been withholding information.
I get it all the time, yeah. So.
Where have you been performing now? Where have the productions mostly been performed?
We are going to perform at Loyola Marymount University on Thursday. This Thursday. And then we're going to take the month of July off. And then in August, we're doing Alcatraz. And then in September, we'll be at Cal Poly.
So I got to back up. I know there are currently no inmates at Alcatraz. But is it being done? So it's being done there as a public presentation connected to that facility?
Yes.
Yes. We have an open door invitation at Alcatraz to do plays there anytime. And I think the first time we did it, they actually spent the night. And of course, you can imagine that's never happened again. But
they didn't spend the night in San Francisco. They spent the night in Alcatraz.
Alcatraz. And there's some really good stories behind
that.
Okay. So, and on that note, I just want to mention, you know, when we went back to Corcoran, that was the first time I had actually gone back to prison in my 10 years since I've been out. And it was quite a pivotal point for me because I just really had no desire to go back to prison. But it was interesting. But, you know, what really moved me was the hope that it gave those men that were in there that, yes, you can come out here and you can turn your lives around and you can prosper and thrive in society. So,
yeah. So, Rich, did you spend overnight in Alcatraz?
No, but we did take the most awesome tour that I've ever had there before. We got a private tour after we performed, and it was awesome. But no, we did not spend the night there. We spent the night in a motel and then performed in Santa Cruz the next day.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah. This is, you know, there are few programs. It's not that I have a shortage of questions. It's that there are a few programs we talk about that are just as incredibly emotionally powerful as this for, I mean, lots of times the programs we do, we're talking about things, whether it be children or the homeless or people who are hungry. We're talking with people who are the community members who are not living that life, but they're helping the people who are. This is an interesting thing to sort out. I mean, we're talking about what it does for former inmates to improve their life and give them a better future. But we're really talking about people who have lived the life on both sides from this standpoint. Do you either of you or any of the three of you know people who are former incarcerated individuals who have kind of said to you, you know, yeah, I know what you're doing. I know, but this is like too weird for me. Please do not bring it up again. I mean, I'm just wondering, that's got to be something for a lot of people is just it's too close to home to live through and to have lived through and then deal with it as a theater production. Has that come up for any of you?
Absolutely. I think it's the norm. Yeah. Prisons are very – there's a stigma. It's painful. It's tragic. Mm-hmm. And we want to just forget it and think that it's going to go away. I think I got into it because I realized that it was never going to weigh out, could never outrun the stigma of being formerly incarcerated. So I decided to just kind of address it head on. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think that's the difference between the two.
Yeah, and I think people like that, as well as people who have never been part of or seen this, will think that until they come and see one,
right.
and see what it's about, and just experience it. Because that's, like Leonard said earlier, when you come to a performance, that's where the magic happens. It squashes preconceived ideas and brings humanity to it.
Yeah, Carolyn, what has your experience been with that?
Oh, I've definitely come across that. I think that it's understandable, and it's fear. It's just so much fear of judgment, and like what you said, just reliving it itself can be painful. So yeah, I've encountered a lot of resistance, but I think that anybody that comes and sees the show, they see the value in it, and every person that I've felt resistance from has come and seen the show has afterward been a little bit more fluid.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned a couple of productions that you've done. What about those stories brought it together as something that specifically needed to be this vehicle became the most effective way to present it?
So Poetic Justice Project kind of has two dual roles. One of them is, of course, theater, and that's to entertain, to move. You know, as long as people are laughing or crying, we know we're doing our job. And there's a lot of different ways
thought,
to do
yeah.
Yeah, provoke. There's a lot of different ways to do that. But the other side of it is that we are the vanguards, or I like to tell myself that I'm the representative of, you know, the, I don't know, what is it, 26 million Americans that have criminal records in this country today, and no one wants to hear their story. And every formerly incarcerated person knows what I'm talking about, where they feel like they want to kind of talk about what it was like, and people just don't want to hear it. So when we were asked to do this, it was just going to be a writing workshop, and we were going to make a play out of the stories that we had. And one of our directors very subtly took our stories themselves and wrote the play with it. And so we were confronted with a bunch of vignettes that were out of our actual stories. And it just came together beautifully, and it's called Inside Out. And it talks about what it was like, you know, when we first went to prison, what it was like, why we were in prison, what it was like to get out, and what it's like now. And so what it's done is we realize that it's giving us a vehicle to tell our story. And that's true for every man or woman or even child that's ever been incarcerated, because it is a story. And it's magical, because that is really what people want to hear. And that is what we really want to tell. It's just that we didn't have the venue to tell it in. And so right now we're still in what I would call season one, but we're actively looking for other men and women who would want to tell their story. And we're going to, then we can write other stories into it. So it's been really interesting.
Yeah. You brought up a point that I apologize for not having asked about before, and that because a good portion of the formerly incarcerated population that is probably most vulnerable in our society is juveniles.
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't know if that's a population. I mean, it's a lot of that is more private.
Yes.
If someone who's 16 years old ends up at 6 months in county jail or in a juvenile detention facility, that person, among other things, is real quiet about it when they get out, if
yep.
possible. Okay, and society is quiet and somewhat protective of that individual.
Absolutely.
Are you dealing with youth in this program, and how does that fit into what you're doing?
We have. Right at the moment, we're not, but we have. Another thing I want to say about Poetic Justice Project, it spearheads out to other areas. For instance, myself personally, I work with juveniles in middle schools. So what I do here has helped me to work with them, and they have stories. We have talked about maybe moving in that direction specifically to juveniles, but at this point we haven't really been able to make that materialize, but I'm confident that it will happen in the future. It is a population that definitely will benefit from this work.
Yeah. We're getting towards the end of the hour, and I want to make sure, and I do this with all my guests whenever I can. I'm going to start with Carolyn since she's on the phone. And Carolyn, what have we missed here that you want to make sure that we don't forget about, that that people remember having heard this program and heard your story?
Well, you guys have done a really good job, but you know, I guess I would just want to repeat that this is something that is meant to unite a community that can be easily divided, and especially along, you know, the lines of these topics. And as personally, this, you know, having this group to go to and to guide me has been the main thing that has helped me stay out of trouble and has changed my life. It's been the beginning of all the good things for me. It all started here. And so I just want to encourage anybody that hears this and likes what they hear to check it out and to get involved, because it really is worth it.
Thank you very much. And thank you for being part of the discussion. I mean, I'm sure there are still people in your life that you would, to some extent, rather were not necessarily directly tied to this story and know about it. So I hope that those people who are supporting you with this tell you how valuable what you're doing is, not only for yourself but for the community. And I thank you for calling in. You can stay on the line till the end of the show. I didn't want to cut you off, but I wanted to thank you very much. Rich, this is obviously an important experience in your life, and you probably would not have thought a number of years ago, gee, I'm going to be a crusader for theater for formerly incarcerated people. What do you want to make sure we remember from this process?
Just the experience. I look at this as a bridge. It's a bridge for us to get back into deciding that. I do want to mention the fundraiser coming up on Monday. Right. It's called the Summer Picnic. It's Monday, June 26th, from 5 to 7 at the Branch Street Deli. All kinds of food on the menu that comes with the price of the ticket. They're going to be giving out free raffle tickets at the door for a door prize. I think it's a handmade quilt or something like that that's really beautiful. So anybody out there that would like to come find out more about Poetic Justice Project and how they can get involved or what they can do to help, Monday, June 26th, 5 to 7 at the Brown Street Deli. So
great. Thanks.
And
Little more about your own story. How long are you going to do this for?
You know, they can't kick me out. Okay, I signed up. You know, I started as an actor.
Leonard said he's tried.
Yeah, they tried to run me off, but you know, I performed as an actor and hauled all the props around and all that. This Time Will Tell, I started as a stage manager down in Loyola. One of the actors can't make it, so last week they asked me, can you get his lines down? Can you do it? And so I'm going to perform one of the actor's parts. And for me, the biggest part of that is I'm not going to be the actor performing his trying to be the actor performing his story, but I want his story to come out. You know, it's me telling Jorge's story, you know, not me being Jorge. So and it boggles my mind sometimes, the opportunities that I've been getting, you know, for a minimal sacrifice. You know, it's such a great way of being of service to a great, you know, thing.
Any chance of a second career?
My mind is open to it all of a sudden. Something that I really, like you said, I wouldn't have thought 2 years ago twice about it. Yeah, I'm really loving theater, and it's something that I've, you know, went and saw a play once or this and that, but never thought much of it until I really got involved with it, and I love it. It's changed my heart and my mind, and that's what our motto is, changing hearts and minds one at a time.
Yeah, that's very good. Leonard.
So just really quick, you know, we are talking about a very serious and dire situation. The United States of America incarcerates more people, more of its own citizens per capita than any other country has in the history of mankind. And out of those people, I think it's like 2.5 million people incarcerated, 98% of them are coming home. You know, we can't do much about the ones that have been locked up, but we can definitely do something about the ones that are coming home and helping them to reintegrate, to reassimilate in their reentry into society. And that's really what this is about. They are our brothers and sisters and cousins and uncles and next door neighbors and, you know, fast food servers. So I just really want that to be on our everyone's hearts and minds. And just do what you can. You know, thanks.
Thank you. There's one element we didn't talk about, and I apologize for not mentioning it, but we have a little bit of time. I'm assuming that some of your actors, and maybe both of you, have children.
Yes.
How do you talk about this experience with your children, and how do you tie this experience with your children into it? I mean, I think it's reasonable to say that the average person who never wants to return to prison again, never wants to be incarcerated, is in kind of a vulnerable situation to have to say to their kids, listen, come on with me. We're going to go see this play I'm in, and I'm going to talk about some things that from my previous life that you may not want to hear about.
I have a 72-year-old daughter who's looking at colleges, and she's looking at acting school. Because of partly what I do, and also because she's very, very dedicated to social change. So I know the best way for us to influence our youth is with our actions, is our behaviors, you know. And every one of those 2.5 million people, most of them have kids. Yeah. So
yeah. And my daughter came and saw the play last year, and she's interested in getting involved. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm.
Yeah, because as I looked at some of the justice statistics that that you folks sent to us before we put the program together, one in every 108 adults in the United States is in either prison or jail, and that was in 2012. But the more distressing one is one in 28 American children has a parent who's behind bars, and that's a cycle that's tough to break.
Yes.
So I thank you very much for making this topic more well-known to folks, too.
Thank you.
This has been Central Coast Voices. I want to thank you all for joining us today. As I've told you before, but I'll remind you again, this is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County in collaboration with KCBX. And I do thank you for joining us today. We do put out a report every 3 years called Vital Signs. You can read it at actionslo.org. Some wonderful, insightful things about the quality of life, or for some people, the poor quality of life on the Central Coast. And that's a report that's available to you at actionslo.org if you'd like to download that or look at it. This program is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent, and we thank her for helping us put this program on. You can give us input at voices@kcbx.org. You can also call us at 543-2323. And this has been a program we hope you've enjoyed and that you've thought about. And maybe you know someone who should get involved in this project, and maybe you can encourage them to decide they've got an acting career somewhere down the road. Thanks to Rich Shepard, Leonard Flippin, and on the phone, Carolyn, that have helped us really gain some insights as to what this is and why it works for people. And I especially thank my guests today for being vulnerable to the fact that they've got to talk about the fact that they were incarcerated, or they wouldn't be able to be doing what they're doing now, and they're willing to talk about it and have their names out there. And I thank you very much. This has been Central Coast Voices.